Good evening. This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We'll be speaking with Congressman John Conyers and Gerald Nadler about alleged election irregularities. Senior House Judiciary Committee members send letter to Comptroller General on election voter irregularities. Congressman Gerald Nadler, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Let's move back to November 8th. You were one of the signatories to a letter that was sent to the Government Accountability Office encouraging the undertaking of an investigation of the efficacy of voting machines and new technologies used in the 2004 election.
There were two letters. The first was signed by three of us on November 5th, the second by six people on November 8th. It was a follow-up to the first. We had, and anybody's on the internet knows, there were any number of reports of irregularities, of all kinds of problems with the electronic voting machines. In one area, we heard that after it got to 3,000 votes, every time you voted for Kerry, it subtracted one vote. And if you voted for Bush, it subtracted a vote instead of adding a vote. A machine in South Carolina, there was a glitch in the machine, and 4,500 votes were lost, and no one knows who they voted for, and they probably didn't affect the presidential election in South Carolina, but may have affected a congressional or a county commissioner or some local election. And there were plenty of other instances where people swore that they tried that on these electronic machines, they tried to press Kerry and it came up Bush. They pressed Kerry a second time, it came up Bush. They pressed Kerry a third time, it may come up Kerry, and who knows how they were recorded. And then, of course, there was the observation that in certain counties in Florida, where you had a certain kind of voting machine, an OptiScan voting machine, Bush got a lot of votes. Where he didn't, we had a different kind of voting machine, he didn't. Where that was the only variable. Now, so we said that, you know, elections not only have to be honest and proper, but they have to be seen to be honest and proper so people trust the results. Clearly, there were some real problems with these machines, as predicted, and we don't want to see that happen again, so we asked that there be an investigation. Now, if some of these assertions prove to be untrue, let them say it. And if they're true, let them say that. Make sure what kind of protections we put in so it doesn't happen again.
And we've also been joined by Congressman John Conyers, Jr. Good evening, Congressman.
Greetings, and to Gerald Nadler.
Hi, John.
Ranking member of the Constitutional Committee on House Judiciary.
Representative Conyers, is it your thoughts that there were irregularities in, let's just take Ohio, for example. Maybe it's not enough to have thrown the election, but do you feel as if there were irregularities?
Well, that's the question so easy to answer. There were irregularities in lots of places, maybe even most places. But the concern, though, is to build voter confidence. You know, this is the second presidential election in a row in which one state determined the outcome, and it was always the conservatives limiting and trying to suppress the vote through a number of ways. And not that all of it was intentional, but some of it clearly was. Inefficiencies sometimes can be intentional as well. How can we be in the 21st century and have somebody in the United States standing in line 5 hours waiting to cast a ballot? And how can we have secretaries of state still resisting a copy, a paper trail of every vote that's cast so that we can be out of this dilemma described by Congressman Nadler? When we get an investigation from the General Accountability Office, much of it will not be able to be investigated simply because there's nothing left.
As for example, that machine in North Carolina or South Carolina where 4,500 votes were lost. We know they were lost. We don't know who those people voted for in any election. They were disenfranchised, and there's no way you can reconstruct it. And there's something very wrong with that.
So you would be certainly minimally advocating that there be a paper trail created for the technologized, the computerized voting now.
Absolutely.
We tried to do it in the Help America Vote Act, and we've been stifled both at the federal level through an underfunding that should be scandalous, seeing that the administration determining to underfund it came to office under some of the most questionable circumstances that have occurred in the 20th century. And yet here we are going through this again. We're still going through how to interpret the counting of a provisional ballot. This borders, you know, on some kind of a deliberate misconduct. A provisional ballot was supposed to save the day for all of these questions where they can't be resolved right away, and we'll take care of it. And now we're getting some of the most arcane interpretations that anybody can imagine. There's enough bad faith in some of these instances that have been recited here to make people legitimately suspicious of the Ohio balloting process, which in turn, like it or not, casts a reflection on the outcome of the election.
The Green Party and the Libertarian Party have raised enough money and are filing for a recount in Ohio. What would this mean? I mean, who would do the recount? How do you see this? I mean, Representative Nadler?
Well, I don't know what the Ohio law is, but apparently if you're a candidate in Ohio and the Green Party candidate was a candidate and the Libertarian was a candidate, then you put up enough money, you can get a recount. And I don't know how exactly they recount. Now, in much of Ohio, they still use those punch card ballots with the Chads that we saw in Florida 4 years ago. And that's an outrage, and it's an outrage for another reason, too. We know that when you use the punch card machines, something like 2 or 3% of the votes don't register. You know, you have a 50,000 votes where they didn't vote for president. Now, you know that if they went to the voting booth, the odds are they tried to vote for president. Doesn't count. 50,000 people in that case lost their vote for president. And we also know that when you change the voting technology, all of a sudden you don't have 50,000 people not voting for president. It's not that the voter didn't want to vote. It's that the technology robbed them of their vote. It's a scandal that we still have in some states like Ohio, 2/3 of the people voting on those kinds of machines that rob 2 or 3% of the people of their votes. Now, I'm not saying they rob only Kerry people, but they rob 2 or 3% of their votes no matter who they were going to cast for.
And, you know, there should be, I must express surprise, that there's so little outrage except from the people who actually suffered losing the franchise. But all of us ought to be outraged by this.
We ought to be outraged. I agree with John. We also ought to be outraged by the fact that you had Secretary of State in Ohio try to say that any registration form, that when someone registered to vote that came in less than 80-pound paper stock, they wouldn't count. Now, he didn't get away with that, but looking for excuses to disenfranchise people because he wasn't sure who they'd vote for, or he thought they'd vote for the wrong person. That's outrageous.
Well, what it's doing to me, sir, is proving in two elections within a four-year period that there is one political group in America that's out to suppress the vote through intimidation, through overregulation, through artifice, through even police control, through aggressive poll watchers. You know, in Detroit, for us to be invaded by young fellows from as far as 150 miles away who took it upon themselves to be sent into Detroit voting precincts to stand around in a very intimidating manner, and some of it got even more than that, just tells you where one political group is coming from as opposed to another political group that merely wants to make democracy work, and everyone who's entitled to a ballot should be given one, that it should be as simple and pleasant an operation as possible. But there you have it. It's stark.
I was dismayed after the 2000 election. I had somehow hoped that then Vice President Gore would take the lead and really discuss the issue of accessibility to the ballot, campaign finance reform of real nature, returning the vote to the disenfranchised, such as people who had been incarcerated, and so many other issues. So where do we go from here? Your letters, both of you have mentioned over 265 specific complaints, and there are websites that you cite, too, that have mentioned that there are 30,000 complaints that have been noted. So what can be done in this next period of time to make sure that we maintain, enhance, in effect, the democratic vote process?
Well, several things can be done. First of all, the vote in this country, for the most part, is regulated at the state level. And hopefully there will be a GAO investigation And hopefully that investigation will spotlight many of the failures of the voting process and where people were disenfranchised and how, or where there were failures to count the votes properly. And we can design legislation or executive action at the state level to correct that where possible. On the federal level, we should have legislation, but I'm not very hopeful that the Republican Congress and the Bush administration will be eager to enact that legislation. As far as I'm concerned, frankly, for federal elections, you should have one voting standard in the country, one voting technology, so that in one area you don't have X percent spoilage of the ballot, that in a different, more affluent area, a more white area, perhaps a much smaller percentage of the ballots being, quote, spoiled by the and not counted because of the technology, which is what you have now. You know, under the Supreme Court decision in Bush versus Gore, where they said it was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution to count ballots validity by different standards in different counties, one would think the same logic would say that it's a violation of the Equal Protection Standard to have different voting technologies used in different places which differentially spoil or not spoil ballots at a different rate.
The other things that we might do is remember that there will be dozens of investigations and inquiries and commissions and committees that will be following this very unhappy development. And what we need to do is build up a citizens' movement that demands that our simple legislation for efficiency and voter-friendly techniques and the obvious foil-proof methods of people tinkering with computers and machinery, technology, be protected. And that's our job. I mean, every election, we've got to get better than we were.
And that means, in particular, we must demand at the state level, at the federal level, that these new electronic voting machines, which are being used in large numbers for the first time, must not be used without a paper trail. It may cost $55 or $60 a machine to provide a paper trail, but that paper trail is the only way you can make sure that you can guarantee and assure people afterward that there wasn't a secret instruction in the software to disregard every third vote for what's-his-name. There's no way of telling otherwise.
Representative Conyers, is it your feeling that the African-American vote was hampered and counted less and that people were turned away more than other groups at this election?
Well, this is American political history, sir. Not only does that happen, it's happened in most elections historically, coming out of the late 19th century. So all I'm saying is that we know in the minority communities that the oppression, the suppression, coercion, intimidation routinely happens. Those people that are disqualified or turned away more frequently are from the minority communities, and as things stand, are in large measure Democratic voters.
You know, there's a piece in the New York Times this morning by Robin Toner, which I found actually quite distressing, and I was interested in both of your thoughts on it. It says that ever since the National Democratic Party fully embraced the cause of civil rights 40 years ago, shattering their hold on the so-called Solid South, Republicans have been making steady inroads among culturally conservative white voters in the region. And a lot of the implication of the article is that the decline of the Democrats is based on their championing the issues of civil rights. How do you respond to this kind of an article?
There's no question that the great transformation in American politics occurred when the Democrats, Humphrey and others, began to say we're going to have to desegregate politically and we're going to have to embrace a more open and equal political citizenry. That's when, of course, Strom Thurmond and others began to defect, and it continued to grow. And now we have a solid Republican South, just the opposite of what we had before. And I think that hasn't completely played out yet, because we've now been overtaken by the evangelical right, which has driven out even the more moderate Republicans that thought they would be able to stay there. So This is, I think, has a even longer life expectancy than I would want it to have.
I think it is very clear. When Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, he's reported to have said to one of his aides, "We've just given the South to the Republicans for the next 40 years. And he was completely right. There is no question that starting with Nixon's Southern strategy in 1968, much of the Republican political strategy for the last 40 years has been based on a racial appeal against civil rights. More subtle now than it was 20 years ago, but still there. There's no question about that.
You two representatives seem to be, you are forcing the issue to some extent in terms of the voting irregularities, and the Green Party and the Libertarian Party in Ohio are forcing the issue. Are you satisfied with the rest of the Democratic Party, with the media coverage, which seems to be, oh, things went all right this time?
Well, I'm certainly not satisfied with the media coverage because the discrepancy, the margin of difference in Florida was 400,000 votes and in Ohio was 130,000 and some odd. So it probably is the case that the irregularities did not cause the apparent victory and the election wasn't stolen in that sense. But having said that, that's not the standard. The standard ought to be, were a lot of people prevented from voting? Were people's votes not counted properly? Did machines steal people's votes? And the answer is clearly, yes, that happened. Did people interfere with other people's voting rights? Yes, that happened. And I'm disappointed with the media, which seem to think that as long as the overall presidential election wasn't stolen, the fact that thousands of people were prevented from voting or from having their votes counted, that's okay. And especially
I'm disappointed in the gentlemanly nature of our presidential candidates. And here's what I mean. There's an obligation to follow through that's been referenced here earlier. It's one thing not to force a fight down to the last single ballot till there's the absolute certainty. But there is the follow-through responsibility that it seems to me follows people who, except for a slight twist of fate, would have been a president themselves, to show just a little bit more concern about the nation and its electoral health than I've seen so far.
And what of the Electoral College? What needs to be done about the Electoral College? Is that a question of abolition?
Well, I was for abolishing it up until November 3rd of this year.
And what happened then?
Well, that's when it turned out that Kerry would have become president with a minority of the vote.
Well, seriously, I think that I would like to see the Electoral College abolished. I'd like to see the voting procedure straightened. But the Electoral College, what it does is it distorts the vote. It overrepresents rural and small states, underrepresents large cities for no good reason, and plays a Russian roulette with the electorate. In a democratic society, whoever got the most votes should win. And we've now seen the last election, Al Gore got the most votes by 500,000 votes, which is five times John Kennedy's margin of victory over Nixon, and was ruled a loser. In this election, had 60,000 votes switched in Ohio, someone who won the election by 3 million votes would have lost. And, you know, even though I would have liked that result because it was Kerry, that really is not tolerable in a democratic society. So I'd like to see it abolished. I don't expect that that will happen, unfortunately, because the states that benefit from it, the small states, have enough votes in the Senate to preclude it.
Maybe now we can just move from the procedural to the substantive. The issue of Social Security, a critical issue. I still have somehow visions in my mind of, at earlier periods of time, people having worked their whole life and winding up in a workhouse in order to survive in their senior years. What is to be done given the Bush agenda and juggernaut around privatizing Social Security?
Well, I think we're going to have to, as a party, oppose it down the line and educate people to why it's absurd, to the fact that if you privatize, if you give people these so-called personal accounts, what you're really doing is saying you will get, when you retire, a very small guaranteed Social Security benefit, much smaller than under the current system, and then you'll have the risk of the stock market for whether you'll get anything else. And some people will do well and will live okay, and others will be in abject poverty, as was the case before Social Security. And the second thing is it'll cost $1 trillion to $2 trillion to switch over from one system to the other. And the third thing is there is no great threat to Social Security as there is now. Even if you take as gospel what the Social Security trustees say, the problem is 40 years from now and is only 1.8% of taxable payroll, which is a small problem that can be dealt with without doing violence to the system that has protected our elderly people and people on disability for the last 60 years, 70 years.
In other words, the political party that has opposed Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are still out to get it by trying to introduce as much privatizing parts to it as possible. I mean, how can you imagine people trying to make choices of how they will invest their individual accounts without consulting lawyers and CPAs? I mean, it's almost, it would be funny, except that these things are being advanced with a straight face.
And Attorney General Gonzalez, will that happen?
Well, it shouldn't happen. But
can the Democrats stop it? Will they try?
There's so much opposition here that's building up around him. I'm beginning to see or feel that this thing is not going to go as smoothly. You know, these second terms always have their surprises. And the way everybody's climbing off this ship now, the economy is likely not to get any better. The war is likely to take some disappointing turns. And I just think that this is not going to be the smooth sailing. The alleged mandate, which never did exist, is not going to be so easy to execute as some who are at 1600 Pennsylvania think that it might be.
Congressman Conyers, you have long looked at the issue of racial profiling. You've been concerned about the federal judges and their independence, which you've often said is at stake, and various issues around sentencing and incarceration policy. Are these all things that are in grave jeopardy and the Democrats have no real strength to push through in the next 4 years? Is there anything that is not bleak in those areas on the horizon?
Well, jeopardy they are in, yes. Grave jeopardy, I might be a little bit more cautious about using that description. The fact of the matter is that everything's in jeopardy with these chaps. But the fact of the matter is also that it's not going to be as easy to execute. This is not happy days are here again for the conservatives and strict constructionists and states' writers who might think that that may be the case. We're dusting ourselves off, rolling up our sleeves, and getting ready to fight this fight on issue by issue. And the reason I think a lot of us feel empowered is that it's because of a solid belief that most of the people in America want to do the right thing and want to see the right thing done, and that they will aid us in some ways in resisting whatever might be holding out for us after January 20th of next year.
Representative Nadler, for the future, a lot of people say that the Democrats play softball and the Republicans play hardball. Will the Democrats be playing hardball?
Well, I certainly hope so. We're in a very difficult position right now because the Republicans have the presidency and the majority in both houses. But, for example, if you're talking about, we certainly have to play hardball and using the filibuster to prevent the Supreme Court or other appellate judges from being appointed and confirmed who don't agree with the Bill of Rights or the Constitution or anti-choice and so forth. But even on a different level, and Tom DeLay forced the reapportionment in Texas, which cost us 6 seats, to guarantee Republican control of the House. Why didn't Illinois do it on the Democratic side? Why didn't Democratic governors and legislatures in other states play the same ballgame? It's not a nice game, but if they're going to play it, we may have to do similar things.
And Congressman Nadler, when does New York get its 911 money?
Well, New York's gotten a lot of the 911 money, but a lot of it hasn't come in, and that depends. I mean, some of it's going to come in as we actually begin to rebuild the trade towers. There are a few billions on that. There's a bill in, there's a question that some of the bond money, money that's put into Liberty bonds, are not really in a form that are usable, and the New York delegation is trying to transform a couple billion of that into mass transit money, and maybe the Republicans in Congress will go along with it, and maybe not. We hope that the administration will be as forthcoming with aid, with allowing us to put that aid into usable form as they were in Florida in the last few months.
And so in the remaining seconds, literally, that we have left, why don't we give Congressman Nadler and Congressman Conyers the final word on what are we going to do to make sure that we have a substantive election reform movement in the next period of time?
Well, we're going to have to fight it in the state capitals. We're going to have to fight it in Washington. We're going to have, as John said, a citizens' movement, because it's intolerable that people can still be deprived of their votes through deliberate chicanery or through electronic or other malfunction today, especially when you knew the malfunction could happen. And we have to demand that there be no electronic voting without a paper trail.
Congressman Conyers?
I'd add that we have to very carefully go through the complaints and protests and criticisms of this past election so that they're documented and those that are valid are taken out of the conspiracy theory category and translated into a program in which we will be fighting for everybody in the country. It doesn't take a lot of imagination for people to realize that what happened to people in North Carolina, Nebraska, Florida, and Ohio happened in some degree in many other places throughout the country. And I think there will be a kind of inspirited support from our citizens when they see that there are members that are determined and are not going to let this go and are not going to say, well, even given or not a couple hundred thousand votes, it wouldn't have changed the outcome, so let's not get exercised.
Well,
I think people are going to feel just the opposite.
And we're going to have to leave it there. And to all of our listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Congressman John Conyers and Congressman Gerald Nadler.